to the Spurs News Podcast, your home for all things Tottenham Hotspur. Now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everybody. It's the Spurs News Podcast. We are back in some sort of normal circumstances. I am Sam. Joining me this week, it's my partner in crime, Stefan.
Hey, buddy, I'm back.
Oh, we are back. It's been a road, a trauma. Thank you to the people who have messaged in and I've had a chat with. I've sort of explained some of the fun and frolics we've had with technical difficulties. I mean, we're not going to dwell on any of that. We are back. We are ready to rock and roll. We've got a lot to talk about. Now, I was kind of in two minds about this because obviously we haven't had a proper conversation in a few weeks. So there's like loads and loads of like topics that have kind of popped up.
Yes.
And what I tend to do is as and when stuff happens and things pop up, I sort of make a little note. And then when it comes around to show time, put together like a little agenda and try and follow it. Try and tick off all the points.
And then we go off on all sorts of rambles.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, the tangents are insane. Now, one of the issues I've got, or not an issue, but it's kind of funny, and I think it's kind of worth bringing up, is I've made several notes about different things over the last few weeks. And when I've gone through to put together the agenda for the show today, What I've realised is some of these notes that were like big social media discussion points are kind of now blown out of the water by the result against Aston Villa.
Yep.
Which is quite funny when you think about it, and it's kind of like a great demonstration of how a lot of football fandom now, especially online football fandom especially, is very reactionary.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? But it's like it's very kind of like you lose a game, everything's shit, everyone's awful. Yep. None of the players are up to it. The manager's been found out. None of this is working. Oh, this is crap. Oh, I wish Jose or Conte were here. They were winners.
Yeah.
And then you win a game, and it's, oh, we're the best. Ange Ball's peak football. So much better to watch. We're the best team in the world.
Love it, Ange Ball. All these players. Instead. Yeah.
Every footballer with the name Son in his name are the best footballers that ever exist. And it's just kind of, it's weird. So
football fans are awful. Let's just put it out there. We are football fans are the worst. Like
it really, really can be. But
you've got to look at good old Eric Dier getting a standing ovation, being substituted off for Bayern Munich in the Champions League, but also the worst defender to ever play in the Premier League.
Yeah.
No, you've only got to look at stuff like that, really, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's valid. I think Eric Dier, just to touch on him then, just as interestingly, he's gone to Bayern Munich, who are not having a good season by their standards. By any other football club standards, they're having a decent enough year. They're second in the league. They're through to the final parts of the Champions League. I think we'd all be happy with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are levels to this game, and that's fine. And one of the things that's interesting is the English Premier League is very high intensity, and the way Ange wants to play, high line, constant press.
Yeah.
Anyone looking at our squad when Ange joined, looked at Dier, looked at Sanchez, for example, and went, that ain't going to work.
No.
Romero, maybe, but he doesn't really have the massive amount of pace for high line. He's certainly aggressive enough. And the way the club worked, it was like, yeah, okay, we've got Romero, he presses, he's aggressive, but we need someone who's going to sweep up behind him. Enter the Rocket Van de Ven.
Yeah.
Who is, by the way, according to PremierLeague.com, officially the fastest sprint in Premier League history belongs to Van de Ven.
Good lad. The guy is
rapid, yeah. And he's big as well, he's a frigging unit. He's got no right being that fast.
No.
But anyway, he is, or at least he was until his hamstrings keep exploding. That's a side note. But going back to Eric Dier, Eric Dier has then gone to Germany, where the league, of course it has frantic moments, but the vast majority of the games are slower. He's able to play in a system where he's expected to play out from the back, which he is comfortable with, but he is not doing it now with some crazed striker like in the Premier League closing him down every 30 seconds. He's got time on the ball, which he didn't get in the Premier League. And all of a sudden, he looks like a great player. And you only got to look at the Bayern Munich fan reaction to him. It's like, oh, we had no idea how good you were. You know, and they're all like, there's whole fan accounts just like apologising to him for their reaction to them signing him. Yeah. And then massive amount of praise that they're keeping him on for another year as well. So he's gone there. He's done really well. And like you said, Tottenham fans were kind of awful to him for the final few years he was with us. And this is where I'm at. It's like this kind of all or nothing. Why can't everyone look at that and go, he doesn't suit us anymore, but he's a great professional. Let's get behind him.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain players that sort of get given that, I don't know what the right word is, but get given that kind of leeway and then other players don't. And I don't know what else he could have done besides loyally serve the club as a great professional for nearly a decade. You know, what more do you want? I don't see it. And it's like the whole not good enough for us kind of thing. Well, I don't think he suits the system. I don't think the not good enough thing. Okay, well, Bayern Munich are a level above us in terms of achievements as a club in Europe, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. He's good enough for them.
Well, yeah.
So it's a bizarre take, isn't it? You know what I mean? But this kind of goes back to this internet football fan reactionary kind of thing. And I think it's the internet gave everyone a voice, which really shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
I think back in the day, this was the pissed up idiot in the bar that, you know, you'd go to the pub after the game and you'd see that one drunken twonk in the corner just talking shit nonstop. And you'd be like, oh my God, that guy every week, he's got a problem. Hell, you go to a live game and you're there and you'll hear someone in the stands berating someone and you're like, really?
Yeah, did you watch that really? Really? Sure.
Yeah. Are you really watching the same game as me? What the friggin' are you on about?
Oh, yeah.
So a football fandom, it's what it is, but the internet gives everyone this kind of megaphone, especially now on Twitter, because basically so many idiots have paid to go this blue tick thing where they can earn money.
Yeah.
So they get money for interactions. So they will deliberately instigate shit. You know, like TalkSport.
Yeah.
TalkSport will post on social media clips that will deliberately incite people to want to ring in and shout at them because it makes them money.
And
now, thanks to the way Twitter is, all the little blue tick wankers are doing the same thing. So it's sometimes I do bite. I'm like, I'm ready to absolutely rinse someone. I'm like, nope, this is what they want.
Yeah, no, I'm not giving them a click. Don't give him the click.
Walk away, Samuel. Don't do it. There's that aspect of football fandom which I find incredibly frustrating. But one of the things that kept coming up, and I actually posted this into our Spurs News admin chat, because I think it's an interesting debate to have. So a couple of games back, we really struggled. And we really kind of we looked like for a few games in a row, like the Ange ball thing had kind of died. It wasn't really clicking. The press wasn't there. The energy wasn't there. The way of playing seemed to be falling down. And I posted it in our chat, and a lot of people were like, "Ange has been found out. He isn't good enough at this level. This isn't Scotland." You know, you saw that narrative, didn't you? Just like flying around everywhere.
Yeah.
And although I wasn't buying into that, I thought at that moment with those few games where things had really faltered, it was worth us discussing. So I did make a note of it to go over in the podcast as this kind of like, where do you think things are? Is it a fitness thing? You know, like we started the season, Ange ball, all guns blazing, injury to the players who have stayed injury free or like run themselves into the ground. The guys who got injured are coming back or trying to find their feet again. You know, I was genuinely interested in what people's thoughts were to why we seem to be coming unstuck. And then we go to Aston Villa, the team that's above us in the league, arguably one of the form sides of the Premier League this year. Well, probably not arguably. One of the best teams in the league this season. That's why they've got the league position they have. They've got phenomenal results, especially at home.
They've beaten some of the big boys at home, haven't they?
They have. And we're going there. It's a pressure game. I'm a Tottenham fan. I'm used to us going into pressure games and walking away thinking, why don't we ever win these?
Yeah.
And we went into it and we demolished them. Like, not just kind of scrape the win. We absolutely demolished them 4-0 at their ground. And these are our rivals, if you like, for a top four spot. And one, I can't remember the last time we had a real pressure game like that and we dominate, like we really wrecked them. I know we've won a few, but not to that level. Two, Ange Ball in full effect. The press was incredible. The football playing out from the back and the intricacy of the passes. Like, the goals we scored, you just watch the play to build up to them and it's like, wow. Yeah.
There's a clip. Okay, I know Kulu didn't score it, but there's a clip where you shared it in our group chat. The Højbjerg.
Højbjerg.
He gets the ball, does a couple of amazing skills around players, and then just feeds this ball straight through. And like the speed of the change from defence to attack, and we dominated the game. Now I do think part of it was down to Aston Villa messed up massively. Well, the manager did, I think. All these big games they've had at home this season, he has set up like almost like a 4-3-3 sort of formation. He's like, they've gone attack. Tottenham have turned up and he's gone, 5-3-2.
So, yeah, and it's interesting.
It was like, of all the teams that you're going to kind of have a bit of a sit back against, surely a high pressing, aggressive team is not the team you do it against.
You say that. genuinely, you say that, but think about the games we've just struggled against. All the games we've just played, and we've genuinely struggled to break teams down.
They've
all sat back. I think Emery got caught in a kind of, I know how to beat Tottenham. I've seen teams cause Tottenham no end of grief.
Yeah.
We've got extreme pace in our forwards who are really on form. We're going to bypass the midfield. We are going to contain. We're going to frustrate the out of them. And we're gonna beat them. Because if you look at the formula of what he set up to try and do against us, it was the same formula as all these teams have frustrated the hell out of us for weeks.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I thought, oh, really? Part of me was looking forward to the games. I thought Villa are going to play.
Yeah.
And so I thought that actually helps us. Like, Villa are going to play. We're going to play. This game might end up 5-5. But it's gonna be a game, you know. It's gonna be a real run at each other. So I just kind of, I don't know what the right thing is. It just, I kind of saw that the way they set up, and immediately kind of like my heart sank into this kind of, oh god.
And
if you watch the first half, largely it was working. Like the first half, I think we had one shot.
Yeah.
So, although we controlled the possession quite well for a lot of it, they created 2-3 fairly decent opportunities. They scored one goal, which was offside. It's clearly offside. So, the first half kind of went the way a lot of these other games have gone for the 90, and I was getting pretty pissed off. I was like, Unai Emery has done a very good tactical thing here. It's very frustrating. The one thing that was different for us is our energy. Our energy looked to be there. Like, our energy in the press, our energy and our general football looked like it was sharper than it had been. But we still, one shot in the whole first half sums it up. They kind of did their job.
Yeah.
So we go into the second half, and the thing that I've seen in multiple interviews from the players and Ange in his post-match, basically, they felt that Villa were leggy. They felt that if they kept moving the ball, they kept doing what we were doing, we were fitter and we were going to create the space. And they, I mean, God, boy, they were right.
Yeah.
I mean, we played through them with such ease through their midfield on a regular basis. Udogie and Porro, I mean, there's another aspect. Those two are Ange ball fullbacks.
They are
without
phenomenal.
A shadow of a doubt. They play this role where they invert and then other times they sort of stretch and they play the role brilliantly. And the drop off, as much, you know, as much as I like Emerson Royale, as much as I like Ben Davis, the drop off is massive. In Ange ball, in the way he wants to play, and he is always gonna play this way, the drop off is big for me in my opinion.
Now, I think we've seen an improvement from both Royale and Davis playing that role. And they are improving over time, but they are a different level. Like the way Porro and Destiny do it with such ease. They just have just fitted in. Like now, last season I was very much we don't need Porro. Like he's not bringing enough to the squad.
We only signed him last season.
I know, but it was like we got him on a loan deal originally, didn't we?
Yeah, but it was an obligation.
But I was like, oh, we shouldn't have put the obligation in. We don't need him. You know, he's not. He didn't do anything enough for me to go, yep, we need to sign him. Yeah. This season, the guy's undroppable.
Yeah.
Like, if he is fit, he is starting and he is playing brilliant. And the passion he puts in as well.
Yeah.
I think, him and Destiny are two of like the most important, almost overlooked a little bit, but so important.
No, I agree. They're just brilliant. And they do make a massive, like having both of them just makes a massive, massive impact. So key in the second half, Van de Ven goes down injured. There isn't any word yet on how serious that is.
No.
Rumours went around with a few press people yesterday that he went for a scan. So hopefully
That was one of those heart-stopping moments. He went down, like he made the block.
Yeah,
and he kind of gets up and winces a little bit, but you don't think much of it. You thought, maybe he hit the ground a bit hard. That can sting, you know. And then he gets ready for the goal kick, and then just rolls backwards. And you're like,
Well, it would appear that at half time he highlighted something didn't feel right, and they basically were like, okay, well, it's not bad. You're gonna run it off and see how you feel.
Yeah.
He went out in the second half to do that. I mean, it was about 10, I don't know,
about 10 5.
He went down like, no, actually, let's be cautionary. Now, he walked off. He left the place under his own, no crutches, no anything like that. So it isn't anywhere near the level of injury against Chelsea.
Yeah.
But being cautious, I mean, the guy relies on his pace. So the caution aspect makes sense. And also, we have made a sign-in in Dragusin for this. We have made this sign-in so we can bring on someone we believe is quality, can play Ange ball. And he came on and did really well. And there's a really funny thing going around on Spurs Twitter, which was kind of like basically people watching the game crying at the idea that we're bringing on a quality defender when one of our defenders is injured.
What is happening?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's kind of like, you're right. When was the last time we had a substitute backup that we all felt we could rely on?
Yeah.
And he did come in seamlessly and we kept a clean sheet, which, you know, is a tribute to him. And
he
whole
made
team.
Some good tackles as well. Like, he came on, he did well. Made some good tackles. He took one block that no one wants to take.
Do you know what is funny to me is they showed that on the big screens at Villa Park, and to a man in the stadium, regardless of what colour shirt you're wearing, winced. It's funny when it's somebody else.
Yes.
It's always funny when it's somebody else. It's not funny when it's you.
He did
make the ultimate sacrifice for a block for us. So yeah, he's dedicated. Overall, I was very impressed with him coming on. Now, of course, it was 0-0 at that point.
Yeah, that could have gone either way. That decision, like that player goes off injured, that could really go one or two ways in the game results.
Yeah, massively. Like, you know, you lose someone because the way we were playing is we were lining up 2v2 with their forwards, Bailey and Watkins,
who are both
Romero rappies. And Van der Ven. Yeah, Romero and Van der Ven were just like, no, bring it. You know, Romero's like, no, I'm going to get so tight to you, you're not getting away from me. And Van der Ven, of course, is just like, hey, try and outrun me, bitch.
You know, I'll give you a 20-meter head start and I'll still catch you.
Just bring it. Yeah, bring it on. So it was interesting, like, you that could have gone wrong. And, of course, we know this is Ange. Ange is playing Ange's way. This isn't a case of, crap, we've lost that player, let's change this around. It's no. My players play my way.
Yeah.
I buy the players, I develop the players to play Ange ball, not like, oh no, so-and-so's dropped, we'll have to change it to something else. Like, no.
Pete Conte, all five at the back, you know, yeah. Not going to happen.
No,
yeah.
None of that rubbish. Do you see that? Here you go. This is the internet debate. The whole, oh, well, he's got no plan B. Do you see that as a big issue? I mean, you've actually said that to me a couple of times with regards to Tottenham managers and stuff. We've had this debate ourselves.
Yeah.
But do you, for me, the no plan B thing, I always think that's a bit of a nonsense. I always think that's a bit of an English football throwback. What was plan B for English football managers? Stick one of the central defenders up front and kick it to him as high up in the air as we can.
Route one!
Yeah. I mean, yeah, well, that's not...
Yeah. Sam Allardyce football, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Peak crazy gang Wimbledon.
Yeah.
So I look at this and the plan B thing, and I look at the most successful managers in the Premier League currently.
Mm-hmm.
Pep Guardiola, Klopp at Liverpool, Guardiola at Man City.
Yeah.
They don't have plan Bs. They have their style of play.
Yeah.
They develop teams to play that way. And sometimes they might lose, but they will not vary how they play because their whole basis of this is we will put our style of play on the pitch. We will outplay the opposition, play in our football, and we will win playing our way.
Yeah.
And when you win stuff, like Man City, going to keep winning stuff. I mean, they got the money to build a kind of a squad over and over again to do that, without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
Liverpool have invested very, very well to allow Klopp to play his way of playing football. Arsenal have now done that for Arteta.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a plan B. That's Arteta's way of playing, and that's it.
Yeah.
So
there's
why
the two theories. The theory is, sorry, that either your plan A is so good that the other teams have to change to face it.
Yeah.
And if you have got a plan B, does that just mean you don't trust your plan A enough?
Yeah.
You know, and I know we've had this conversation before about managers like Pochettino, for example. He had a plan A, and his theory was, my plan A is so good that you need a plan B to deal with our plan A.
Yep.
And then we kind of went through the dark times where our plan A was, well, if we can make the spectators fall asleep, then we can make the other team fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then we'll score a goal. It'd be great. And now we're back to Ange Ball, which is playing this exciting brand of football. And like you say, it's like the City's, the Liverpool's. It's a case of, if you believe in a product enough, why would you change it?
Yeah.
Like, he has full belief that his style of play will work. He has full belief that his style of management will get the players that he has playing his way of football. And as we've seen, for the first time in a long time, we are actually now a club where if a player doesn't suit what we're trying to do, we will move them on.
Yeah.
Now, that's something we haven't done for a long time. We have spent a lot of time putting square pegs in round holes.
Yep.
And now we're not. Now we're going, oh, square peg, off you go. So, in terms of the not having a plan B, there's always an argument, right? If a team sets up and completely nullifies you, there'll always be that kind of, but why didn't he just change something? And I think you're always, no matter what happens, I think you're always, especially like you say, with the Twitter lot, you're always going to have, they completely nullified us. Why didn't he just bring on an extra midfielder to start tighten up the midfield? Or, You know, oh, they were completely overrunners at the back. Why didn't he make it a five at the back or something like that?
Yeah.
And it's just, he's not going to do it. It's just the way we play, isn't it, mate? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah. That's my little take on it.
Okay. Like I said, we won the game 4-0. Madison, Johnson, Son and Werner with the goals. Delighted to see Werner score again. Son, just a machine, just phenomenal. Two assists and a goal in the game. Madison breaking his neck to make it into the box to score his goal. What a phenomenal cross from Saar.
That was beautiful.
That was next level. Didn't know he had that. No, I'm not going to lie.
I genuinely thought he was falling over.
The stumble
he makes as he starts to run, you're like, ah. You see it every match. You see a player off balance, try and swing a ball in, and they'll shank it into row Z of the crowd behind the goal or something. He's stumbling, takes a step, swings this ball in, and I'm like, holy crap, it's one of the best balls into the box I've seen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no,
from
it was,
deep
yeah.
as well. Like, he's not gone up to the byline. He's swung it in from fairly deep.
No, he has.
He pointed it.
Yeah, that cross was something else. That kid's a baller. There's no doubt.
He is special, that kid, isn't he?
Johnson took his goal brilliantly.
Yeah.
We've had discussions about Brennan Johnson a lot. And it's funny because it's become a thing now. Like, Johnson does something good in a game, I get bombarded with messages.
You're welcome.
Well, it's funny because anyone who actually listens will know I didn't really slag him off. I just said I wasn't excited by assigning him because I've not really seen what other people tell me they've seen.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think I saw it in a Tottenham shirt, really. He was starting games and it was not great. He came from the bench a few times and I thought, okay, I'm seeing in cameos against slightly tired legs, I'm starting to see his confidence build. Yeah. In this game, it was probably his best performance in our shirt for me, I think. But he won me over with one moment. It wasn't the goal.
Yeah.
It was McGinn kicked Udogie up in the air, which was a blatant red card. Anyone who doesn't think that's a red card needs to just give their head a wobble. It's ridiculous. He isn't a trip. A trip's when you dangle a leg out and you trip the guy, and that's
this
a
guy,
yellow card.
He swipes.
He kicked his leg out. He didn't go for the ball. He literally kicked his leg. Referee was right there and was absolutely spot on. But when he did that, the person who went for him, like, straight away, was Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson didn't even
wait for him to stand up. He was
ready to kick his ass. I mean, as far as football fights go, you know, it's like, oh, hold me back. But I was thrilled with that. I was like, yes, young man, you have earned my respect and love.
Yeah, he was straight there, eyes of fire. He was there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, goal, whatever. Ready to fight? Yeah. Yeah, okay, you've won me over. Well done. I was pleased to see that. It's the thing that, I mean, it's funny, and it's not really, is Udogie jumped up ready to fight him and then realised how much pain he was in. That was kind of a...
Yeah.
Like, sort of jumped up like, you mother, ow!
fuck you!
That was quite a... Yeah.
But he does, Udogie went down, kind of did a full 360 roll. Popped back up, took two steps and went,
that hurts like hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you take a boot like that when you're flying, that is going to hurt.
Oh, yes.
So overall, we demolished them and I'm absolutely over the moon. The reality is it was a fantastic result, but those fantastic results only remain fantastic results if you back it up. Our next game is away at Fulham.
We should have quite an easy win there, really.
Really?
I think. Like, Fulham have not been doing great recently.
Not recently, but they're still a decent side
at home. They're a decent team at home, but I don't think... I think I sent you my prediction, didn't I, in our group chat? I sent you that pretty much for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I mean, there's no easy games in the Premier League, but my point is that we have to back it up.
Yeah.
Like, you go to Aston Villa and win 4-0, then lose at Fulham and they win their game. We're right back where we started.
Yeah.
You know, all of that was for nothing. So we got to go to Fulham and win.
We got to build, that up. Keep building on these results.
Yeah, it's one result needs to lead into the next because otherwise it doesn't matter.
And I think we're looking at a few players, especially like Timo and Johnson, who are, I think like we've said about Sonny before, like confidence players.
Yeah.
When they are brimming with confidence, they're scoring goals, they're taking chances they wouldn't normally take and then they're going in.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that with Werner's goal against Villa. That finish was a lovely finish. Like that is a more difficult finish than people realise. From the angle, definitely. From the angle, first time finished that across the keeper. I'm full of confidence. I'm burying this.
Yeah, and he did. Yeah, no, it was really good.
And Johnson the same. Like Johnson's finish, he's kind of falling to the side, and still manages to get it up and over the keeper.
Yeah, that was a great finish.
You know, I think those two players in particular, their confidence is now there. And Sonny's brimming with confidence at the moment. You got Kulusevski playing some great football. Like he was one of the best players, I think, on the pitch against Villa.
Second half, definitely. First half, I think he struggled a bit. Second half, his work rate, because the work rate doesn't stop with him.
No.
His kind of work rate then started really yielding results. And then obviously when they went down to 10 men, he had that little bit more space. He really kind of dominated the game.
Yeah.
Like, could have scored. Very unlucky.
He should have scored he had a couple of good chances. But I think those guys up front are full of confidence, all of them. And hopefully when Richie comes back, he's going to keep that confidence that he had before the knock because he was flying. You've then got our midfield, kind of, you know, Maddison, Bentancur, Saar, Basuma, all these guys in the middle, they're all, at the moment, fully fit and confident.
I do want to make a special mention to Bentancur, who came off the bench, switched himself to the left side, and took the opportunity to kick Matty Cash up in the air. Beautiful. to a massive cheer from the travelling Spurs fans, who absolutely loved it.
Yes.
All game Cash was getting shit, and it got to him. Like he was making mistakes after mistake, like simple passes going out of play.
Yeah.
He really got to him.
Beautiful.
Yeah, Matty, what's the score? Was a chant that went on for quite some time. It was very, very enjoyable. I like that. Okay, it is time to hand the show over to fellow Tottenham fans and the listeners because it's time for their comments.
Now it's time for your comments from our social media.
People on Instagram don't really love us at the moment, but we have got one message that's come in. So we're going to start there. The one message is from bum, 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 from Soz. It says, "Hi guys, question for the next podcast once the technical difficulties are solved." Yes, we're back. Should we stop buying players from Spain and Portugal? It has not been a very fertile hunting ground for Tottenham. Good, Pedro Porro, Toby, I think, was on loan somewhere else.
Yep.
Not so successful, Reggie, Gil, Royal, Regulon, Soldado, probably others too. Thank you very much for the question. Where we recruit a player from, I don't think it's the problem. Our scouting and our analysis has been the problem. Also, it's worth thinking about some of those players that were mentioned. Soldado, for example, is a perfect example of everything can be right, but life happens and then everything can be wrong. Soldado was the third best goal scorer in Spain.
Yep.
He was third behind a certain Messi and Ronaldo playing for Valencia. That's tough.
That makes you very that's much the company. Best. That's like the best goal scorer in Spain because you get rid of those two.
Basically, because the other two are cheat codes. And then you are as a number nine, a striker. He signed for us. Every one of his attributes made sense for England. Everything about that deal made perfect sense.
Yeah.
It was a goal scoring striker who had the build, the physique, the pace, everything for England. It made so much sense.
I was well excited when we signed him.
Him and his family moved here, and his wife miscarried within a few weeks of them moving here. And psychologically, family-wise, blame the move. He struggled, couldn't ever find his feet, couldn't ever settle. In and out of the team, we changed manager, and it just never worked for him.
Yeah,
you can. And the reason why I'm using that as an example, which is a horrible, horrible situation in his life, which thankfully, you know, him and his family moved on from as best they could. But you cannot. It's like an X factor to signings. You can do everything right. You can get all the scouting right, everything right, and something can happen totally externally that you're not aware of, or the vast majority are not aware of. And it impacts you, because at the end of the day, the players, they're all human. And whereas some might take adversity off the field and channel it into some sort of rage on the field and play through it, I know me personally, I wouldn't be able to do that.
No.
You know, and Soldado wasn't able to do that, and he really struggled. And the club didn't really do a great job of supporting him. He kind of got hung out to dry by a certain Sherwood, who came in just saying he wasn't good enough and all that crap. So you look at those situations like that where it don't work. Then you look at a signing like Janssen, who came from Holland, a top goal scorer in Holland. One of the things any scout should have told the club when they were looking at signing him was, when he plays week in, week out, the guy scores. When he comes off the bench, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you can look at his stats. Like, anyone can just look up Wikipedia, you know, and just look at this and go, okay, I don't need to be a football scout to look at this guy and go, when he plays, he scores. When he doesn't, he's got no rhythm. He's got no kind of... Every club he's been at, you can see that. It's, like, literally right there.
Yeah.
Goals from the bench, zero. You know, plays a few games, will score goals in Holland. The level between that league, Eredivisie, and the Premier League is massive. The defending levels, the skill sets, it is a big jump. And you can look at great examples of how strikers have made that jump, and you can look at great examples of where players have not. You know,
yeah.
Most recent, Van de Beek at Man United,
yeah.
Was one of Europe's most sought-after midfielders, now probably couldn't make a championship team. You know, and that's genuine. Just the guy just wrecked, doesn't look a player at all.
Yeah.
So you look at Janssen, and that was awful scouting. And we should never have signed him. Harry Kane was our striker, and we were signing a player as a backup, and we're signing a guy who cannot score as a backup.
Yeah, he needed...
Well, where was the thinking?
Yeah.
Where was the thinking in that? Then you got a signing like Llorente. Llorente was at a point in his career where he was keeping himself fit to play 20 minutes, 30 minutes to play a bit part as a striker.
Yes.
He was a professional enough to look at that and be, that's where I need to be now for my career. Great signing. He scored some really important goals, made some really big contributions from the bench for us. Mate was cover when Kane picked up an injury.
Yeah.
But he was great. And that was like a no-brainer kind of signing, really. And people don't credit it. So the notion that there's kind of certain areas, sorry to go back to the question, I think it's down to us. It's down to us as a club. Now, we have changed that. We have changed the way we scout, the way we look at the data now. I've talked about it on the podcast previously, and I've given examples of that. But the best example I can give for this latest recruitment thing was Van de Ven. So Van de Ven was playing for Wolfsburg in Germany.
Yeah.
Dutch central defender. He'd had a great season for them, but Wolfsburg, not exactly a side in Germany or top of the table or anything like that.
No.
Not, you know, not challenging really. So you're signing a defender from there. The vast majority of people wouldn't have heard of him until we were linked to him. You know, Generally. I know there's the Football Manager crowd out there and the FIFA crowd out there who are like, oh yeah, I always sign him. He's amazing.
If you're a FIFA player, you sign him purely because pace wins on that game. So everyone is a defender.
But this is real life.
Yeah.
You know, and in real life, I don't think hardly anyone had heard of him.
I hadn't.
No, I hadn't. And we got linked with him, and I looked at a few things. And the thing that straight away I looked at him and went, Jesus, he's rapid.
Yeah.
He's huge, but he's rapid. And I was like, okay, well, if we're going to play a high line, I can understand why we're signing this guy. But the thing is, he's confident on the ball. I mean, he's a Dutch football player. Dutch players are a bit like Brazilians. They're kind of born with a ball at their feet, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so, doesn't matter what position they play, they are confident on the ball. And so when we scouted him, when we looked at it through a lens of, this is how we play. This is Ange Ball. This is how we have to look at a player. They have to be good on the ball. He ticks that box. He needs to be quick because of the high line. He ticks that box. He needs to have a physical presence because it's the Premier League. He certainly ticks that box. He's the guy's a unit.
Yep.
So we actually worked our way through this and we're like, okay, yeah, he actually ticks every single box. Now, we then made a move for, I think it was two different defenders. There's a guy at Leverkusen who, of course, are flying in Germany.
Yeah.
And that particular defender is doing brilliantly for them. And then you've got him, you know, Wolfsburg. And the idea from everything I've read and seen is that Van de Ven was the second choice, which is hilarious. But this is where our scouting's at now. This is where we're identifying players who meet all this criteria that we've set. We're then looking at them to make sure, you know, that wasn't a one-off. You know, we're actually really looking at the data, really going through it. And then we're building a short list based on that. And we're saying, okay, that's the guy we want first. Let's see. No, there's no deal there. Okay, bang, we move on.
Yeah.
The example, another perfect example from that window is the goalkeeping situation, David Rea. We went for David Rea. They quoted a price. We said, there's absolutely no way we're paying that for a guy with 12 months left on his contract. We will give you this plus a bonus for this. They said no. We moved on to the second choice on our list because we knew recruiting a goalkeeper had to be done quickly.
Yeah.
We knew it had to be done. And the next person on our list was Vicario.
Is the fact that two of our best players this season were both the second targets.
Yeah, and this
bad.
But this is the point I'm trying to make about the recruitment. If you identify the skill sets that you need to play Ange Ball,
yeah.
It doesn't matter where we're recruiting the player from, it doesn't matter where they are on the list, if you like. We are looking, and the reason why David Rea was ahead of him was purely the homegrown thing.
Yep.
There was no doubt in the club's mind that Vicario was as good a goalkeeper. Obviously, in my opinion, he's better.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt in any of the scouts that Vicario was out there, but he wasn't homegrown. And so when you're trying to build a squad, a homegrown goalkeeper, it makes a big difference. It's helpful.
Yeah.
But Lloris wasn't homegrown. So in essence, we went, okay, well, we're going to keep the squad structure as it is then. We'll bring this guy in. And, you know, that you got to listen to the players as well. And this is an interesting thing. Ange now calls the players and he has a conversation with him. And there is an example, although they've not named who it was. Ange told Rio Ferdinand in an interview in that window in the summer, he spoke to a player who Ange got the impression was looking at Tottenham as a stepping stone. And Ange said, no, we're not doing that. Pull out the deal. I don't want him here.
Yeah, I heard that. I'd love to know who that was.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to know. But the interesting aspect of that is that means when he's speaking to people and he's talking to them, they are looking at Tottenham as, oh, this is great. I'm joining a big club. Vicario literally said in an interview that when he found out Tottenham wanted him, he was willing to walk from Italy to make the deal happen. Van de Ven said he couldn't get over, you know, the interest and was just blown away. Dragusin, who chose us over a move to Bayern Munich, because he was like, no, Tottenham came in, they were determined, they presented themselves, and I spoke to Ange, and, you know, this is what I wanted. It is the way we are playing, the way we're identifying these players, and the way we're going about our recruitment now is so different.
Isn't it?
It's so different to a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, we have made such a massive, massive change. Here's one thing I'm going to say, right, just to throw the spanner. So ultimately, to answer the question, I don't think it matters where the players are from, because think about the players we've recruited from France and Ligue 1, this, like, massive facepalm. But the way we go about recruiting now is different. And so not where they're from, but how we go about it, I think is the big thing. So he was the scout who identified Van de Ven and identified Vicario and identified the others in that window. We got rid of. just to throw the spanner for everybody. So basically he was doing the job that Lang that we then brought in was doing. He was okay for him to stay on, but he wanted to go and try and become a sporting director somewhere, so he left. But that guy who did a phenomenal job in the summer with Ange, he left the club. So if the recruitment, the next round of recruitment's crap, then we all know.
Go back to signing French wingers that have got N at the
Un winger, skill.
Un midfielder, Un forward.
Yeah, that's them. Yeah, you know the score. Okay, so we're heading over to Facebook. On Facebook, we have Jacob Manna says, "Are we going to finish top four? This is giving me heartburn." mate, that's a prediction. You're asking us for a prediction there. Start of the season, I predicted us nowhere near the top four. Where we are now, I personally think we're still finishing fifth, is my humble opinion. I'd like to say we finish fourth. I'd like to say we finish first, if I'm honest. But
first might be a stretch.
Well, I don't know. We got to play the three teams above us.
I love I was just going on to one of my tangents. I fucking love this. So everywhere, Sky Sports, BBC Sports, and I do listen to Talk Shite when I'm at work, mainly because I just find it amusing. Unless Graham Souness is on a Monday morning, which I cannot stand, but that's a whole other debate. All of them are like, the title race. It's all about these three teams, the title race, facing each other. It was a 1-1 draw at the weekend. Ah, everyone is completely ignoring the fact that Tottenham basically hold all the cards to the title race.
Yeah, it's like, kind of crazy,
if we get to it, it's like, Arsenal are doing quite well. And I think we play, what is it? City, Arsenal, then Liverpool.
We play Newcastle, City, Arsenal and Liverpool with four games in a row. Four games.
We could
season-defining run.
Tell me about it. But we could very easily get to the Liverpool game, look at the table and go, all right, play the under-18s. Arsenal are a point ahead of Liverpool, play the under-18s. It's fine. No, but we are like, those to have those three teams like back-to-back, we have got a massive say in who wins the title this season.
We could do it
ourselves.
And
no one is mentioning it whatsoever.
Yeah. We win all those games.
Yeah.
We win every game from this point on. Don't concede another goal. And scoring 2-3 a game.
Yeah.
Title's on, mate. So, could we?
Could we? Yeah.
No. Genuinely, the top four... Do you know what, Jacob? I honestly don't know. I'm caught in between the two because part of me just doesn't think we're that consistent at the moment. But then that performance against Aston Villa was very, very good. And if we back that up against Fulham, I'd probably say yes, I think we can do it. But the inconsistency of recent weeks worries me, so I'm not sure. What about you?
I am currently refusing to bet on anything at all. I put an accumulator on at the weekend of 9 teams, all of them pretty much certain to win, and 2 of them actually won. So I don't bet on anything right now. Like, there's no chance. Right? No, I am not. Not even doing it.
The next question we've got, by the way, I'm just going to put to you. Okay.
Yep.
I'm not answering this. I'm just putting it to you. James Campbell says, "Is Brennan Johnson the best BJ we've ever had?"
Oh, he's up there, isn't he? He's up there.
Not the best BJ I've ever had, personally, but okay.
I'm now thinking, what other players with the initials BJ have we played for Tottenham?
Yeah, that's the joke. You go with that. Ryan Miller says, "Firstly, hope you're both doing well, and I'm glad the podcast is back. With 11 games left to go, 33 points to play for, where do you think Spurs will finish and on what points? Currently at 53. How many points do you think we will get from Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool back to back? I think we'll get 9 from that. I think we're going to demolish all 3 of them and really screw with everyone for the title race. But then we're not going to win any other games because we're Tottenham.
Yeah.
We'll beat the 3 best teams in the league and then just get dicked by everybody else.
So
no,
we're on 53 points. We've got 11 games left. So that means we're going to finish the season on 84 points. Yeah. Let's say 84.
No, I don't know. Ryan, we were just saying, we you know, top 4, 4, 5. I honestly don't have a clue. It's such a strange one because you look at the way we played against Villa and the way we can play, and I feel confident playing that way against anybody in the league and giving it a bloody good game. Yeah. And thinking we could win. You know, I genuinely feel that way.
Yeah.
But we are inconsistent. Like, we have struggled in other games and we've not shown that same energy. It's easy to motivate yourself for the big games. You need to then go to Fulham away and win as well. And that's no disrespect intended to Fulham, just the Aston Villa game was a big game, you know, in terms of the league position, etc. We needed to win that.
Yeah.
So the motivation was there and we went out and did it, which is great because in times, like I said, we've played those big games and looked, you know, scared almost. So, but for me, it is just a case of we got to almost break it down to one game at a time. James Maddison said this horrible cliche answer, I know, but we just got to focus on winning each game because we got no other distractions, no cups, no Europe. Our focus needs to be on every single game. You know, we've got a game a week, basically. I think there's only going to be one situation or 2 weeks coming up where we're going to play twice in a week in the whole rest of the season.
Yep.
So we've got the time to prep, to be ready, hopefully keep the squad fit and yeah, do as well as we possibly can. But yeah, as for predictions, I can't. Do you want to have a stab at it?
No. No, I don't.
The final question is from Tom Perks, who says, who do you think is definitely going to the Euros with their country this summer, and who do you think could play their way onto the plane in the next 11 Premier League games? I assume he means from us, from the Tottenham squad, I guess. I don't know. I mean, if he's asking in general, Jesus, I have no idea.
Yeah, there's this one guy that plays for... No. All right, so if we were just to look at, like, the Tottenham Hotspur squad.
Yeah.
For the Euros. Okay, let's have a
look. I don't even know who's qualified. I'm so out of it with international football, man. I've lost such interest again. Gareth Southgate managed to drag me in, and he's also managed to push me away again.
I mean, let's be honest. Fraser Forster, probably not going in with England.
Vicario for Italy?
Vicario
is it,
for
are
Italy
even there? I assume they are.
I think they are this time. So Vicario for Italy, yes. Did Wales qualify?
Don't think so. I don't know. I haven't got a clue.
If they did, then Ben Davies, yes. Pedro Porro should go with Spain. Destiny Dog, he should go with Italy. Van de Ven should be there with Holland. Radu, if Romania qualified, I don't know if Romania qualified, but if they did, you'd expect him to go. Højbjerg, you expect him to be there with his Danish right. teammates.
Hang on, I've loaded the teams that are there. All right, so Germany, Scotland, Hungary, and Switzerland are Group A. We don't have Timo Werner, maybe.
Werner,
maybe,
do you think Werner? I think he's got a chance.
Yeah, I think he's got a chance. Okay, so Group B. Spain, Croatia, Italy, and Albania. So, yeah, I think Udogi and...
Pedro Porro, they both should go.
Oh, for Spain, yeah. Yeah, Vicario for Italy, I think, yeah. Group C, Slovenia, Denmark, Serbia, and England. I mean, Højbjerg for Denmark's kind of nailed on.
Yep.
For England, I think Maddison should definitely be there. I don't see anyone else, really.
No, probably not. No, I think you're right there, Maddison.
Okay, group D, Holland, Austria, France.
Van de Ven.
I mean, yeah, Van de Ven has got to be there with the Dutch squad, surely.
And Ndombele probably not with France.
I'd like to think not. I'd like to think France have got slightly better options. Romania are there.
Oh,
Romania
okay, so,
are there. They're in Group E.
Radu should go.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's I don't think
Sweden,
there's anyone else.
Did Sweden qualify?
No.
Good, okay.
Not that I saw there anyway. I don't.
Gets a rest, so that's all right then.
Yeah, Sonny will have a nice rest.
And you didn't say Wales either, I didn't hear.
No.
Okay, so
no,
Johnson and Davies get a rest as well, so that's not too bad then.
Yeah, at least I didn't see it there on the list. There were the last few groups only had three teams, so
yeah.
I don't know how up to date that was. So there you go. Thank you to everybody who's messaged in. I really appreciate it. The only thing I've got left to talk about, very, very briefly before we call it a day, is only Tottenham Hotspur, in my humble opinion, could appoint a manager to play great football again, to get the feeling and the connection back between the fans and the club, and then shit on the fans from great height when it comes to ticket prices.
I'm glad you've mentioned this. The 6% increase.
Now, season ticket prices have gone up by 6%. Now, the club are arguing they froze them from moving into the new stadium, COVID and everything like that, and therefore this is a kind of increase which, when you aggregate it out over the years, is in line, blah, 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 blah. The thing that annoys me, and this is the thing that I want to try and drive home to people, this increase to the regular football fan is a lot. A 6% increase, when you look at the prices already the highest in Europe,
yeah,
to a lot of them, it is a big increase, and it is the difference maker between people renewing and having to give up their season tickets. And I know from Matt, for example, how much having that season ticket meant to him, how long he waited, how much it just kind of,
yes,
breaks his heart if he's being priced out of it. And there are people who have held their season tickets for a lot longer and are being priced out of it now and are having to give that up. The additional income over a season from that increase to the football club is estimated to be about £3 million from the ticket price increases and the changes they've made.
And how much money does the club make in general per match day from merchandising and food?
Yeah, so you look at the match day income from the club is now for a home game anywhere between £2 to £3 million. So the club doesn't need this. Like right. This is the thing. Like, you look at some football clubs who are perhaps struggling a little bit, and they're looking at the FFP and things, and they're making these changes, they're making these increases, and they're saying to the fans, look, we need to increase our revenue, we need to do this. Tottenham don't, and this is where it's a kind of, you're looking at that and it's actually just greed.
Yeah,
you're actually exploiting loyalty. You're actually now at the point. Now, the increase is awful. The increase is something which I think everyone saw coming. We spoke to Anthula, who was a member of the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust months ago, who was organising protests and demonstrating, because she said quite eloquently on this podcast and to many other people, the ticket prices for games have gone up, season tickets will be next, and a lot of people scoffed at her and like gave her crap over it. And she was like, no, listen, you will be priced out. You will have problems. We need to make a stand now.
Yep.
And people didn't listen. It didn't go ahead. She even left the trust, you know, because the trust kind of backed down over it, and she felt that was the wrong decision. And I stand by her on that. I think she was absolutely right, and is proven to be right now, because the other thing that they've brought in, despite consultation, you know, we got the fan advisory board who said they thought this was an awful idea. The Independent Supporters Trust said, please consult us with this. And they said, yeah, we will. And then didn't. The club are getting away with senior concessions, or doing away with senior concessions. So Tottenham fans who have supported Tottenham their whole life are now senior citizens, pensioners, people who are not wealthy and they're not working. They're of an age where they're struggling. This is a cost of living crisis. And our football club are saying, yeah, you got to pay full price or sod off. We want younger fans.
That's probably the bigger kicker.
Like, imagine being a Tottenham fan like for 30, 40 years, going to games, season tickets, buying your tickets. You're now a senior citizen and the club are basically telling you to F off. We don't care about you. You're not important to us. You're not what we want. it's disgusting. And, a lot of the fan groups. So, for example, there is the TIFOs that we've seen at the games this season, the flags, the atmosphere stuff. That is fan organized. The club haven't been involved in that. This has been fan groups have driven this in association with the club. They've, you know, spoken to the club to do it. And they've been organizing these things, the fundraising. The fans of, like, the TIFO, for example, fans have funded that. And now they've all been cancelled because the goodwill between the club and the fan groups has been destroyed. So the next TIFO...
The next TIFO is We Won't Pay. It's going to look really bad.
It's just, it's awful. It is absolutely awful the way they've gone about it, because you've got these fan groups, the fan advisory board. Now, don't get me wrong. You'd say, as a business or as a something, we are going to put our prices up. Of course, customers and everyone are going to say, no, you bastards. That's standard. But this is different. This is a football club shouldn't be a business transaction all the time. You shouldn't look at it as the fans are customers. They're fans. They are fans of the football club. And you are exploiting the loyalty they have and the love they have for the football club. Like, so they are treating people as if, like, Tesco's are treating their customers. They're kind of looking at this. Now, I don't know about you, mate, but I am not particularly supportive of any one particular supermarket. If my supermarket I go to whack their prices up, I'm going to another one. Football's not like that. We are Tottenham fans. We are not going to see them whack their prices up and go, oh, do you know what? I'm not a Tottenham fan anymore. I'm going to go support Leyton Orient. That's not how it works. That's not...
No.
They are literally exploiting the fact that fandom is is love for the club.
They're penalising loyalty, which seems really backwards.
Which is batshit, and it's awful. And we and many others are calling them out on it and trying to force a change, but knowing our club probably won't. But it leaves a bitter taste when so much has been done, so much good stuff to try and bring everyone back on the same page. Their ability to just be tone deaf to that and tone deaf to people is it's on another level. I can't get over it. But anyway, that was that. That was our show for this week. A massive thank you to everybody for listening. We will be back next week. The gods of the podcast world willing. We play Fulham next. Hopefully it's another win we can talk about. Until then, everybody, come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
Thank you for listening to the Spurs News Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Stay up to date with all things Tottenham. Follow us on social media. All links are in the podcast description.